you can't speak to it confidently because it's not been approved yet. But I think that would be an amazing offer as we look at, because a lot of our clients don't have these policies, or they don't know what the policies are supposed to say. So advertisers or agencies have had to not only take a stance and opinion on it, but we're having to lead the client of like, hey, you're a nonprofit. This is what it should say for you. This is how that matters to your industry. And that's marketers have not had to think at that level before.
You just recorded the intro.
There you go.
Welcome.
That's what I mean for, you know, casual.
Welcome. This is Sean Doyle, the host of Aligned, the podcast for executives who are trying to find new levers to pull to increase their profitability, grow their revenue, and ultimately understand how to leverage Welcome to Aligned. I'm Sean Doyle, the host. Aligned is for the executives of emerging middle market companies who are looking for new levers to pull, new ways to understand sales and marketing, and find new growth, new revenue through that. Today's guest is Will Riley. He's a revenue operations specialist at Fitzmartin. And today we're going to talk about marketing technology, but more so in the sense of what you're facing and hearing. For the last couple of years, you've heard about the death of the third-party cookie, and we're not talking Cookie Monster. So we've asked Will Riley to come in here and offer some practical insights about cookies, maybe touch on privacy, data, risk, and let's just go from there. Will, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me. Glad to be back on Aligned.
So you are, yes, you are a repeat guest.
that's right.
You're an expert in the practical, right? So there's a lot of wonky stuff. And I think what you're going to see, what executives are going to read about as this third-party cookie debate dominates industry headlines and moves into a legal conversation. 22 is going to be a year that really defines privacy laws, and cookies and privacy are interacting. They're inextricably linked, but they're not the same. You were talking to me about this. Explain the difference between privacy and cookies.
Yeah, absolutely. Privacy has to do with your intent with data and what you decide to do with that. So when you look at example privacy policies, they actually read very differently than cookie policies. Cookies have been added to privacy policies over the last few years. When you look at legal disclaimers from financial institutions or other professional services organizations, I'd say privacy policies are not new, but they have evolved to encompass and feature cookie policies. And specifically with cookies, that is, what are we storing about our visitors to our website? What are we storing and using data from our CRM? And how are we leveraging that for our own marketing and sales efforts? So when you look at privacy and cookie, they're definitely one and the same, but cookie is definitely a standalone section that needs to be addressed that we'll talk about today within privacy policies.
Neither of us is a lawyer, just to be fair. I would say that you're going to see, you've seen Congress facing bills, and I've looked at information transparency, the Personal Data Control Act. You're seeing a lot of press around ending platform monopolies. When you look at Google and Facebook, you're seeing the cookie question come up. There's recently been a lawsuit that would eliminate Google Analytics, which is a common platform I don't know what the penetration rate is. 80%, 90%
right,
of websites absolutely have Google Analytics on it. And that, it will just change the way your marketers think, all this government action. Now, I think beyond this opt-in right to act, beyond opt-in, there's this thing called right to action. And it's a difference between state and federal law. I'm not an expert on it, but think about it this way. If, in addition to opt-in requirements, the advertising world is impacted through people's individual, a private person's right of action, which is the term, that means a private citizen is legally entitled to enforce their rights under a given statute. So now we're moving to Joe Smith can sue your business because of what you did with the data from them visiting your website. You had a cookie, you stored it, and now you've got a personal, your business has a personal legal liability. So this is serious stuff. Beyond that, Will, you recently this year had a case where Google shut you down because of their points of view. So there's a legal point of view that's a state level and or a federal level. But now we're also dealing with Google's opinion, and we don't want to name the clients, but about what people are doing and whether Google or Facebook likes what you're doing in your business.
That's right. And, you know, it's so interesting is that predominantly digital advertising, and we all know this as marketers, if you're advertising digitally, you're spending money through Facebook, Instagram, and Google. Clearly there are others, but vast majority of our ad dollars are going to those two platforms. So if they say that they have a new opinion, we have to, as it states now, we have to be in compliance with that. And that's where it matters so much for a client. If there's extreme risk if they manage their own ad dollars and their own campaigns without having a third-party perspective, such as a Fitzmartin agency working not only with the campaigns that are in market to make sure that they stay in market, but we're working with the platforms to make sure that we're in compliance and mitigating the risk of being sued.
Beyond being sued, would Google have the right to effectively, or Facebook have the right, if they turn off your ad dollars,
right?
If they turn off your ability to advertise, that means they've turned off the traffic to your site.
Right. Yeah. So that's a great point. So not only are you at risk of the legal battle, but you could be at risk if you're in repeat violation of not being able to advertise again digitally. And when we think of 2022 and where we are, you know, we obviously digital was one of the major digital evolutions of the last digital is a really one of the I know what I'm trying to say. I'm just not remembering the book. So I'm
Hold
just
on.
Going to say it differently.
Pick up.
Yeah, we've seen digital advertising change drastically since it's been available, especially at a mass level. Automation has been really a subsequent benefactor of digital advertising. And really, when you look at the last 10, 12, 15 plus years of how far we've gone, you're really just seeing that we went a little too far and we're having to put some guardrails around it.
So I think you bring up an interesting point, and I am the host of Aligned. I don't want to pretend that I'm also not working at Fitzmartin. So we face questions from clients that center around like the value prop. Like, if I can buy my own ads on Google or Facebook, why don't I just do it? If the business of our clients can just buy it themselves, save the markup, save the professional services fees, you know, there's a list of value props that an agency provides, and I don't want to go into that, but I want to point to an oft not thought of thing, and that is this legal issue. If your internal buyer, and yeah, anybody can drop a credit card into Google or Facebook, and that's easy, right? I can
really
buy
easy
ads, that's easy. But are you aware, and is the person that's going to do that, are they understanding technology and compliance, first-party data shifts, third-party data profiles? Are they understanding all these things? And is your website, is your platform equipped with the right terms and conditions? Because Google or Facebook can look at your terms and conditions on your website and determine you're out of compliance with their policies and turn off the spigot of traffic to your site, which means your revenue changes. So that's a serious problem.
It's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal. So let's talk about some of this in a really practical way, because we're getting wonky. We're in the legal world, and I think it's important just to understand, as an executive leading sales and marketing, that it's not just buying ads. There is ads. There's value to understanding. There's legal implications. There's corporate policy. There's governance. And all of this matters. So if we were to pick something practical, let's start with this cookie thing. And the idea of going forward that first-party data will reign supreme over third-party data. First of all, that's a really wonky sentence. Break that down for me. What's first-party data? What's third-party data? What am I using now?
Say cookie. First-party cookie and third-party cookie. If you could just say that last segment again.
Pick up. So, Will, moving forward, let's find some really practical applications for this conversation. So first-party cookies, third-party cookies, if I'm buying information from another party, if I'm having it on my own site, help me understand what all these things are, all these different aspects, and what am I doing now probably?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I would absolutely challenge everyone who listens to really understand the difference on first and third-party cookies. We're going to talk a little bit today on that. But after you listen to this episode, we're going to link to some resources that we have found beneficial at our own understanding and even give directional help if you don't have a cookie policy or if your current cookie policy is not in compliance with some of the future regulation. Happy Will! So really, when we look at first-party cookies, Sean, these are created and stored by the website Consumer Visits to help enhance their customer experience. Sound familiar? Amazon. Yeah. Amazon's experience is totally tailored by first-party data. It's what you bought. It's what you might buy again. It's a repeat order. It's your subscribe and save. All of that information that Amazon has is first-party that you have given them in a transaction.
So in that case, in that scenario, there's a cookie on my web browser that helps Amazon or my app that helps me understand, helps Amazon understand who I am and what my behavior was. What's the first party data then? That's the stuff that's sitting on Amazon's server.
Yeah, right. They have a data file on you looking at that information. So
they know what stuff I bought, they know the movies I watched, they know all this stuff, and that is the data.
Right.
For them, it's first-party data. Now, if Amazon sold, and I don't think they do sell this data, maybe they do, if they sold it and you bought it, if I bought it as a business, then that would be third-party data.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Third-party, on the other hand, is coming from other domains, so it's other websites that are tracking that experience. Whenever you hit accept cookies that they have a tracking pixel on it, that's third party. So when you go to ESPN.com and you hit accept all cookies, well, ESPN, I'm not saying that Disney, okay, let's pause. I don't want to make a claim that Disney does that.
It's okay. Just keep rolling.
Okay. Yes. So that's a great point, Sean, because yes, third party cookies come from other domains. So these are websites that have a tracking script or a tag, and they're technically observing your behavior, and then they're serving that in form of a retargeting ad. And what's interesting is that when you go to these other websites, you do it all the time. You go to a website that says, hey, we have a tracking pixel, and you hit accept. You are now feeding that third-party data supply from this affiliate site or this third-party site. So this is an example of Amazon, we're okay with it. And for some reason,
right?
But we're not okay
because I get benefit from it.
Yeah, I
give
benefit.
Them permission because when I go back, when I open up the app tomorrow from the thing that I looked at today, I want to know that it's there in my past searches. I want my movie watching history to be recorded so that the recommendations they make to me are better. Like there's stuff I just don't want to watch.
Right.
Well, I hate horror movies, for example. So. Right. Its algorithms would know that I never watch a horror movie on it. Therefore, it doesn't present that to me. There's value to that to me. So that's why I think I would accept a first-party cookie and data from a... So let's roll that out past Amazon and into some wonky little business-to-business deal.
Yeah.
A company that has this narrow, narrow expertise in something. And they're selling it to other businesses. Because this right now, an executive might say, yeah, that's Amazon, that's Google, that's Coca-Cola, that's Disney, that's all these big companies. But what about me? I manufacture this little thing.
Right. So we're starting with third-party cookies. And that's what is being sunset in 2023 from Google Chrome, and that will just be the phase one of a monumental shift in how digital campaigns are being allocated and assigned.
Okay, wait. This is getting great. What? So 2023, January 1?
We don't know the exact month yet, but it's definitely in 2023. There was projections that it was going to be this year, but it got moved to next year.
So for all practical purposes, if you've not considered this or you haven't, you need to ask your marketing team.
It's coming.
You need to ask your agency what they're doing, because in 12 months possibly, that's all changing.
Yeah.
What's the penetration of Chrome? I mean, roughly.
It's 80%. Of browser okay. traffic.
So if you want 80% of your website traffic, I have a client who I look at their data frequently, and they've got 40, 50,000 visitors a year to their website. So if I want to turn that 50,000 visitors into 10,000, just don't do anything, right? Because it'll all get shut down.
Right. Well, and that's very interesting, because one of the biggest differences and positions that we're having to take is we're having to adjust how we're spending our ad dollars, because without third-party cookies, yeah, like which campaigns are affected? It's not all of them, but it's a majority of them. We have clients. We know companies that buy third-party data from, whether it said.
You want to talk about Equifax and
how
that? Okay.
We have clients, prospects, friends, people that we know in the industry that buy third-party data all the time, whether that's through an Equifax mailer or you're trying to get 100,000 emails to send on an email cadence.
What about like a Zoom Info?
Zoom Info is going to be at high risk there. It all depends on where they got it from. There's a really interesting article that Wired magazine did a year ago, and their position was, let's not kill the cookies. Let's let the consumer sell them. So instead of Sean's cookies being resold three times over, and then he ends up in an email database getting spam on his personal or work email, what if they went to Sean and said, hey, we're going to pay you $1,000 for you to sell these level of demographics about you? I mean, you're talking about, we're a capitalistic country. I would do that in a heartbeat.
So that already exists. There's a browser called Brave, and a whole ecosystem of blockchain, built on blockchain technology. It's a cryptocurrency. And on Brave, if you use that browser window, then you can choose to accept ads and get paid for it in that currency. So that's already happening. So I hope somebody out there just went, whoa, my mind was just blown. Because right now it's so easy to look at NFTs, especially, but blockchain technology, and say, you know what, there's just no application. It's just some weird, wonky stuff. But it's coming real. I mean, I've invested in Brave, to be fair, to share full disclosure, my 67 cents of investment. But it's
not retiring
true.
Yet.
Like, it's going to happen. It's going to, that's going to, and that is an asset. You know, anybody who's ever looked at things like Facebook has discovered at some point that you are the product in Facebook, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's not out there just for fun. I mean, they're selling you. That's what their ad platform does. And I can't speak into the corporate depths of somebody like an Apple, but when Apple sells privacy, the other part of that is what they're gaining is first-party data. And what they do with that first-party data is up to Apple, because you're buying into that. And I've bought into that ecosystem. I've chosen to trust Apple with my data over other companies, not Android or not Google's phones or whatever. So, I mean, you're making decisions. This is getting really... So back to the practical. I'm running a business, a manufacturing company, and help me understand this first party, third party. So we're talking to a company next week that has a database of hundreds of thousands of names. They're buying it from a list broker that I don't know anything about the list broker, the credibility of that list, and even what that kind of, what certifications. And there will be partner certifications. Data quality and compliance matter more and more. So if you're going to buy a list, you need to ask that partner, what certifications do they have? And there are certifications out there, independent third parties. And we work on platforms that make us commit before we send out 5,000 emails that these are emails that people want. They're not spam. So this is happening more and more. And it's easy to click the button and send the emails. It's not ethical. It's not honest. But what do you tell this company that's bought, you know, I got a 15-year history of buying trade show names. What is that okay to do?
No. that's a complex question. And I'm going to try to give three examples here. Sean can hold me to it to make sure that I give three.
I'll just cut in right now. We're gonna have to extend to a second time. I know this is great. So let's wrap this up, and then let's talk about what we're going to do next in a second episode, if you can come back.
Yeah, absolutely. It really comes down to, where do you get your data now? So are you pulling it from your CRM? Are you buying it from someone? If you're buying it from someone, that decision tree will no longer exist, or likely cease to exist in a different way. Either the quality will be bad, it'll be turned off forever. We don't really know. But I would say, if you're trying to prepare, which is what really this podcast is doing, we're trying to prepare and make it known that, hey, this is coming. We know about as much as you do, yet we need to be able to take some practical measures to be ready. And one of the fastest ways you can be ready is stop buying third-party data. If we can start to shift and help shift our advertising strategies to pull from the data that our consumers give us. For example, a credit union has a lot of information on a member. They have an opportunity like never before to have a completely tailored member experience digitally on their website from the first party behavior that they are interacting with. So they come to our homepage, they go to our product page. We're not losing that web data. Again, one of the biggest shifts is that if you're buying a list and marketing that and trying to get that list of 100,000 to convert, those strategies will likely to cease. What I am excited about is that if you invest in the right tech stack and are very upfront with your member base or customer base with what data you're capturing and how you intend to use it, you're ahead of the game. I mean, it is really exciting to think of what you can do if you're truly personalizing a web first-party experience to your members or customers because you're using the data that they've already given you.
So really what I'm hearing you say is the agencies or the people that are helping you, your marketing department, your ad agency, whoever, that their game is getting ready to have to go up.
No doubt.
It's not that there's going to be this shutdown of marketing. It's actually going to become more authentic, more personal, more one-to-one. So a credit union's, I'm going to lean into this a little bit. That's an easy win, right? What if I manufacture something? I don't have your financial statement. I don't have an agreement where people have said, here is everything about me. Like, right. I mean, I've always heard at church, if I want to know something about Will Riley's life, look at his checkbook. Right.
Right.
And I can tell you anything about what he values, what he thinks.
You think
about.
I write checks?
Well, okay. I guess it would be a Venmo account today.
There you go.
But so this, what do I do if I'm a manufacturer, if I'm in some other non-financial world?
I started with the easy example.
Yeah,
the manufacturing, there's gonna have to be a focus on sales and marketing alignment. And because the CRM needs to be the little G gospel in this case, that if I...
What's a CRM for those who might not know?
Customer relationship management system. So Salesforce, HubSpot, Microsoft Dynamics are three of the larger ones that we work in and specialize in. But if the data is not in the CRM and it's not being stored effectively, and the data that we're storing obviously gets really complex. You talk about the trade show example. If they gave you that, if they consented to that, then you're more than okay to upload that into the CRM.
So when I attend a trade show,
right,
and I pay for that, I need to actually read those terms and conditions.
You do.
Right? I might be agreeing.
You totally are.
And
you've done it.
Right.
That's why you get those marketing emails from all the vendors that are there.
And direct mail.
And direct mail.
Snail mail.
But what do you give them? Name, business, website, and your mailing address. So direct mail, email marketing, and retargeting
ads. So what's missing there is, in first party data, I can start to determine intent right? I can start to determine next best product, next best sell.
Yeah, we've actually been cheating the system. We've been getting third-party data, like from the trade show, and then we're building either look-alike audiences or we're doing email campaigns. And what we're not doing is thinking about our current customers. Because if we're building our personas and online profiles from who we already have, then we wouldn't be doing these third-party strategies.
Oh, I love it. So one of my favorite clients, the engineer, the head of engineering, is the biggest fan of Voice of the Customer, which I love. Well, the CEO loves it too. But the fact that engineering gets the value of actually having a dialogue with your customers, and that's incredible.
That's amazing.
That's where marketing is going to have to grow. I love that you just said it's a crutch. Buying data is a crutch.
Right.
And agencies have done it. We've done it. Businesses have done it. So the emphasis on what it's going to take to do marketing well and sales outreach well, which is another way of saying the emphasis, the way to scale your business beyond the capacity of a salesperson knocking door to door, is going to get harder, a little more complex. So I'm going to offer a counterpoint, and then we're going to wrap for this episode. You said, I know, I listened. You said third-party data is going to die. I think that's wrong. My opinion is third-party data are going to be viable. I think third-party cookies are going to be dead, and that's going to go away, in my opinion. You know, marketers are going to have to reevaluate in terms of their data partnerships. For example, that third-party data, buying that data from the trade show, might still exist and it might be viable. But what's going to have to happen is your marketers are going to have to ask and understand the credibility of those data partnerships. What kind of fidelity is there in the data you're buying? These are questions, you know, in the past you just asked, if was it the right profile? How accurate is that email address? Is the phone number? Is the title there? Is the person still employed there? And we wanted to buy data, it was verified once a month with a telephone call. I think that third-party data is still going to exist. The third-party cookie is going to die. So the third-party cookie was that shortcut. So, wow, we just got wonky with the difference between data, first party, third party, cookies, all of it. It's a complicated world, but I think it's a really exciting world. So when we come back, I hope this helped. When we come back, I hope we're more helpful. So we covered compliance briefly. And Will, I think you've got an offer. I don't think you've got an offer. I could pretend like I don't know. But you've got an offer about that. And this is, again, another value that revenue operations at FitSmarten provides.
Yeah, absolutely. We have been working on a standardized compliance policy for both privacy policies and cookie policies. We've noticed that these need to be tailored to your industry. They're probably not,
right?
If I had to guess. Or you may not have a cookie policy in general, and you may not be in compliance with certain legislative acts such as GDPR and CCPA. And what we have done is that we have written a incredible foundation for you to get started with what should be in my privacy policy, what should my cookie policy look like. We've actually gone an extra step further and have found some of the top data management companies such as AdRoll, HubSpot, Salesforce, and have pre-written how to be in compliance if you use those technologies. So it's a really great offer that we've been working on for several months, and we hope that you can download it after this episode.
And I know enough because I had to write the check. It's not you've been working on it. We've hired the premier lawyer in the industry to understand and these implications. And I'll just add one little quick note. You mentioned California's, the California Consumer Protection Act, and that's important. And there's the EU and their protection acts, GDPR. But the other thing that we're not thinking about is last year, Virginia passed a policy. Ask your marketing people if they're up to date on Virginia's policies. Colorado passed law, state law.
Yeah.
There's four states, I'm forgetting the other two, that have all passed laws passed beyond what California has done that everybody talks about.
Yeah, that's great.
So if you're doing business in five states in America, that's what? We have 50 states still, I think.
Well, and that's where it gets pegged on, is that if they buy and sell there, what if your customer travels there?
Yeah. Oh, it's perfect.
You got to be in compliance.
And it's the same really as, and it's a maturity. It's a natural maturity. Remember a couple of years ago, the trick used to be, hey, I'm going to buy my sneakers online from a store in Arkansas, then I won't have to pay state taxes where I live.
Right.
Right. And that got fixed. This is the same thing is going to happen here. That's going to get fixed. So when we get back, let's talk about what we want to talk about: customer cross-sell efforts, how data informs that, front of the funnel, all the way down to sales and support and service teams at the back. You know, what do you do with that customer-centric point of view once you have a customer? That would have heavy first-party data implications. So. Where did you get your data now? Great question. What do you do with the data? Let's summarize that. Where are those ad dollars going? And that tech website stack and the compliance. So let's pick up on all of that and continue this conversation.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Rock and roll.
Come on.